Good morning, everyone. How is the assignment 2 going on? Okay, almost finished. Good, because assignment 3 is on the way. And whatever we need for assignment 3, we'll start in this week. So basically, we are going to learn this week and next week. Just a moment. So we are going to learn data modeling, and this week and subsequent week we will be concentrating on that, but assignment 3 is just related with one part of the data modeling. So let's see that what are the different kind of data models we need to prepare, we need to create. So we will see first database system development life cycle, but we will be concentrating on just few of the phases there. And what does database design consist of? Where do we start? What do we make first? Then how do we convert it to some other format? And etc., etc. So this is basically the database design. Can you see it now? Is it better than before? Yeah. So these are basically all the steps, but we will be concentrating only on the steps which are within the inner block. So can you see? Is it clear? I don't know. For me, it's not clear. So basically, we are going to do 3 steps: conceptual database design, then logical database design, and finally the physical database design. And we are going to start this week with conceptual design. So how do we create a database? How do we design a database? So first of all, we need to talk to the customer for whom we are creating the database application for, right? Then we get the requirements from the customers, and that's the, if you can see, that is the third block from the top, requirement, elicitation and analysis. So we are starting from there, and there are some other steps, but we will not be going to see much detail, the planning and etc., etc. When we are trying to create a very big database applications, we need to prepare the plan, etc., before we can go into requirement collection and analysis. So we talk to our customer and we get the requirements. Now requirements can be of 2 types. The requirement can be data requirements, which are only related with the back-end part. What kind of data we need to store to create our database applications. And there can be functional requirements also, that what kind of operation the user or the customer want to operate or do on those that database. So here in this course, basically we are concentrating on the back-end part. Right, so we will be mostly concentrating on data requirements and how to convert those data requirements into different models. So those who were present on the Friday lecture may recall some of the things we studied, 3 categories of database models. And these are basically the things which we are going to do in these 3 inner blocks. So we will start with the, so basically these 3 phases of database designs are conceptual database design, logical database design, and finally the physical database design. So in conceptual database design, what do we do? Let's see. So basically, when we get the data requirements from the customer, initially we don't create directly the tables inside the database management system. Like I said on Friday, for example, if you want to make this building or multiple buildings, we don't start making the buildings by putting the bricks and everything. That's not a good plan. So first we try to create on paper some blueprint, right? Or maybe some models of the building. And once we are sure that this model is perfect and there are no error and it is structurally strong and it can withstand all the pressures and all the problems later on, then we start to make the building. And similarly here, when we are trying or our intention is to create a database inside a database management system environment like MySQL or Oracle or any other, we don't start creating the table directly. Why? What can be the reason? Why not? We have some mental model and let's start just, we know the SQL statements and let's just create those tables and populate it with data. Why there is a necessity to waste the time to do additional steps in between? The reason is just like in the case of this civil engineering, that if we will make any mistakes, if we will not have a proper plan, proper design, which is validated design, then there may be problems we can face later. And then correcting the problems or correcting our errors when we are in the process of building the actual building will be much more costly, right? We may need to tear down what we have already built and then start over again. And that can be very expensive and time consuming. So it's better to make a blueprint on the paper, and once we are satisfied with that, then make the actual thing. So the same philosophy we use in the database design. So we start with the conceptual database design, and here we use one of the conceptual data model. Some of you might have heard about UML, which is one of the conceptual data modeling language, or you can say data model. And we are going to study one of that, but that is not UML. We are going to use ER modeling, but there is not much difference between the both. When we create the UML diagram, we also specify the operations there. Here we will not specify the operations. We will be just emphasizing on what is the data that is going to be stored, right? So you are somewhat making UML class diagram, but without the operation, right? So that is the conceptual data models are high level semantic data model. This is the most easier to make because this is the way we human perceive the data. It is very similar to how we view the data. So we start making with the conceptual database design. But actually, whatever data is specified here or whatever relationship we have specified there, we cannot store the data here. So we need to convert it into some other format which can be understood by our relational database management system like RDBMS, like MySQL or Oracle. So the second phase is, once this conceptual data model is built and validated, and we are going to learn about how to create this conceptual data model this week and next week, and your assignment 3 is related with conceptual data modeling, right? So once we create this, then we convert it into logical database design. And in logical database design, it is based on some specific data model, but it is not based on some specific relational data, specific database management system. We can choose any of the database management system, but of course we need to decide which logical data model we are using. And there are various. One of them we are going to learn, that is relational data model. But there are other data models which can be used at logical database design, like hierarchical, network, object relational, and there are many. And these different data models are used by different database management systems. But because we are using MySQL, which is based on relational model, so this is the next we are going to do. So we will convert our conceptual data model, which is already validated, into logical data model, right? So we will do the all that conversion, and we will do normalization just to finally validate that our design is correct. So after next week, we are going to learn logical database design and the normalization process, which is kind of a validation process there to check whether our logical database design is correct or not. So here also, when we are doing conceptual design, we haven't decided the database management system. It is free from, it is not dependent on any database management system. And similarly, when we do the logical database design, again, it is not dependent on a specific database management system. But of course, whatever database management system you are planning to use, you need to use the same model at the logical database design level which your database management system is using. So for example, if it is based on object relational, then you need to use that here. But in our case, we know which database management system we are going to use, that is MySQL or Oracle, or most of the commercially available database management systems are based on relational model. So we will convert it into a relational model. Once it is validated with the help of normalization process, then we will do the physical database design. And that you are going to use their SQL. So we will learn some more statements of SQL. So in the previous week, we concentrated on DML. Do you remember what is DML? Data manipulation language statements. So basically, we are selecting the data, we are inserting, we are manipulating, we are updating, we are deleting. So that's what you did in the assignment too. But then we didn't see the statements which helps us to create the schema itself. Because here the tables were already created for you. But now you are going to create your own tables, right? So that is we are going to do in the physical database design. So we will start with the requirements and then we create the conceptual data model, which is a very simpler representation or pictorial representation of our database design. Once it is validated, we will convert it into logical data model, and there we are going to use relational data model. And once we are okay there, we know it's correct, then we will create our tables with the help of SQL, with the help of create table commands. So this is the whole procedure we are going to follow in this week and subsequent week before Rune takes over the course. So this is physical database design, process of producing a description of the database implementation on secondary storage. Describes your relations. We will not come to the file organization because file organization is already decided by the operating system. But of course, we can create indexes if it is needed to, if we want our query to return the result much faster. So we can create additional structures like indexes over our relations to achieve the efficient access of data. We will also specify the integrity constraints. Do you remember the relational constraints we studied last week? What are the constraints in the relational model? Domain constraint, key constraint, referential integrity. So here we will specify our primary key. So obviously with the primary key, the key constraint and the entity integrity constraint will be established. We will make foreign key with the help of that. The referential integrity constraint will be established. And we will have the domain constraint, and we can put some additional constraints or conditions on our tables also. And then the physical database design is specific to the database management system we are using. So it is actually the last stage of the database design where everything is specific to the database management system we have chosen. So far in the previous two stages, you don't need to make that decision at that time. But here you have to make the decision where you are creating those tables, which DBMS you are using to create your tables. And in our case, it will be MySQL. This is the basic, but we are studying it here. The database environment consists of, basically when we are creating it, it consists of these three layers. And if you see at the outer level, there are various users. So for example, if you consider that we are making a university database, there can be multiple users of that university database. There may be people sitting in the admission office who wants some data to be stored inside this database system. There can be some people who are sitting in the finance office. They may have different requirements. So every group of user, admission office, finance office, or maybe teachers, they want some other kind of requirements from the same system. So there are different, and another group of user is students. So they all want some different thing from the same database, that is the university database. So for example, let's take the example of finance office. So can you think of what kind of data the finance office would be interested in? Here we don't have the concept of fees, but in many of the universities all over the world, students have to pay their fee to study in the university. So maybe the finance office will be interested in having all the students' list. So there may be many details here, student ID, all the details, which year, the admission year. And the fee deposited so far, which date it was deposited, etc., etc. So this can be something which finance office may be interested in. Now, we may not have all the data in the same table. We will learn about it, why we are dividing the data into multiple tables. Why not keep it in one? So we will talk about it a little bit later, but let's suppose there is a two tables which this office is related interested in. And suppose there is another group of user which is admission office. And they also are interested in knowing all the student detail. That means one of the table is common. And again, they may be interested in knowing what are the different courses which are running in different departments. And then they may be interested in knowing which student registered for which course and got which grade. So there may be student ID, course ID, grade. This is very simple form, right? So this is just two group of user. There may be student view, there may be teacher's view also. While creating the table, so this is basically the top external level. Every group of users have their own view of data, which they perceive that this is the only data that exists in the database management system. Database. So they don't know whether other data is available inside the same system, because either they are not interested in viewing that data because it is not useful for their day-to-day operations, or the second thing may be that they don't have the permission to see that data. So there may be many of the things which I cannot see because I am not the administrator here. I can only see about the students, those students who are registered in my courses and which grades they are getting. I don't know what are the other students who are studying in different other courses and who is teaching them and which grades they are getting. So I don't get that kind of information. So every group of users have their own view of data, and that is the different views you can see at the top level. But actually in the database model, you need to consider, when you are designing the database, you need to consider every user's request, but you need to also think about minimizing the redundancy, so that you don't have to duplicate the data at multiple places. It will be extra effort, extra work. And even if you not take into consideration extra work and extra effort, if you have too many duplicate data, there can be the problems of inconsistency, data inconsistency in the future, because you have two copies of the same data. Whenever you are making some changes at one copy, you need to make sure that the changes must be reflected in another copy, right? So the same thing is here. When the database designer will talk to different group of users and see their views, then a whole conceptual view of the whole data is created. So they combine the database designer, in our case that will be you, will take the requirements from different users and try to minimize the redundancy and make a conceptual view, which is nothing but the collection of all the different users' view. So if you see here, the conceptual view will be something like this. So as you can see, student table, both group of users are interested in knowing the details of the student. And then we have the fee. And then we have course. And then we have student course grade. So conceptual view may be this, which is the collection of the individual user's view and minimizing the redundancy. Here the only redundancy was, duplicacy was the student details. Both of these group of users need those student details, but we don't need to keep double copies inside our database management system. And what will happen finally? There will be, each user will get their own, get the permission to see. So for example, these two tables, the administrator will make the finance department to see only these two tables. And the administrator will make another one, which is this. And admission office can see those three tables, right? So basically, one of the table is shared by both group of user. And in real scenario, there may be multiple tables which are shared between different departments. And we try to eliminate that. So that is the conceptual schema, which is basically the collection of each external view or each sub-schema or every user's view. But we see this in this format, but on the disk, it is not in this format. It's the string of, it's the collection of zeros and ones. And that is basically the internal schema, how it is actually stored. So we will have some SQL command to create the physical level. Now this is, initially when the database environment was made, this was the three schema architecture of, but there is a possibility in many of them, one of the level, especially the conceptual level, may not be available, may not be present directly. The external level is mapped to the internal level. Now, why we have these three level architecture, why it was the preferred architecture? That's because it provides us some flexibility. And what is that flexibility? That is logical data independence and physical data independence. So basically, this is the same one like the previous one. And there is a mapping between the external view and conceptual view. We just saw that somewhere it should be there that these are the two tables required by finance and this is the view of this particular department. So that is the mapping which is provided by the database management system software, right? And then conceptual view is translated into the internal schema. So whenever we are writing a query, any group of user wants some data to be retrieved, his or her view at that group of users' view is mapped into the conceptual view. And then it is mapped into the internal because the actual data exists in the internal schema. And then finally the data is found and then given to the given user, right? And this mapping is done by the external and conceptual level mapping is done by DBMS software. The conceptual and internal mapping is done by the DBMS software with the help of operating system, because here the storage devices are involved, right? But this three schema architecture give rise to some facilities to us, and which is logical data independence and physical data independence. So what is this? The physical data independence says that if you make some changes at the internal schema, the physical schema, you don't need to change the conceptual schema and external schema. Now, why do we need to make the changes at the physical schema? That is because maybe we need to change some file organization. Maybe our queries response time was not as good as we expected. So we want to maybe change, the database administrator decides to change the file organization to have more efficient query. So in that way, the internal schema is changed, but there is no need to change the conceptual schema or any of the user's view. The advantage is that the previous application programs which were used by the users will work as it is without any changes. So that is the physical data independence, and it is provided by, this facility is provided by almost all the database management systems. You make changes in the file organization or something, there is no need to make the changes at upper level, or your application program need not be changed. For example, if you add one more column, or if you change the data type of any existing column, the previous query will work as it is most of the time, in 99.99 cases, until and unless there is some substantial changes. The second is logical data independence, which is comparatively difficult to achieve. Is you are making the changes in the conceptual schema, and there is no need to change any of the external schema. So if you are making the changes in the conceptual schema, one of the external view will change. If you are making some changes in student table, obviously both user need to know that. If you are making just in the fee, then only this group user's view will change. So one of the group of users view will change if we make any changes at the conceptual schema. But if the database management system provides us this facility that we are making changes at conceptual schema, and there is no need to change any of these group of users view, then that is called logical data independence. But we have only in limited form this, because if we are making changes in conceptual schema, one of the group users view will change, until and unless that change is very, very minute. So that group of users need to know. So there are mapping between these different, we already discussed about it. And these are the data independence, we just discussed about that. So physical data independence is provided by most of them. Logical data independence is comparatively difficult to achieve. So we talked about this, we will make, there are external schema, conceptual schema and internal schema. The internal schema is dependent on the database management system. So that's all you need to know. Basically, you need to know the conceptual data design, logical data design and physical data design, which we are going to follow this week and next week. So let's start with conceptual design. Any questions so far? All right. So as I said before, assignment 3 is on the way. So you will make a conceptual design based on the data requirements given by us. So we are here. So we will today have some idea about some basic construct in conceptual design. And as I said before, the conceptual modeling can be made by using any of the conceptual data model. And there are many examples like UML, but we are going to use ER modeling. So So before we go further into other designs, that is logical, we need to check that it is structurally valid. So it should be structurally valid, it should be simple, it should be expressive, what you want to represent. Non-redundant, when we check for the validity, we try to remove the duplicacy part. So even though you have some data requirement and you come up with a data model, conceptual data model, you need to check again whether there is something which you may eliminate, which is not needed, which can be represented in some other way with some less redundancy, and integrity preserving. It is shareable, it is extensible, entirely independent of implementation details. So we don't need to know which DBMS we are going to use later on. So these are the basic things we are going to discuss here. So we need to know what is entity types, what are relationship types, attributes of these entities or relations, the domains of these attributes. We talked about domains previously. Primary key, here we also call it key attribute. Integrity constraints. So we will start with identifying the entity types, then relationship, then attribute, then domains of the attribute. And this is the way you also do your assignment 3. So these were the original notations when it came into existence, but we are not going to use this notation. We are going to follow the book notation. So we will not, we don't want to confuse ourselves. This is another notation which is called crow's foot notation, but we are not going to use even that. We will be following this UML notation because you are going to use Microsoft Visual for creating your conceptual design for assignment 3. So we will be using the third notation, which is UML notation. And because this is the most of the people are using it, so it's better to stick to this. In different other courses, maybe you will need this again and again. So in the UML, there are various kind of diagrams which we can make. And we are basically making class diagram. But our class diagrams will not contain of any operations. So we will be only concentrating on the data part of the class. How many of you already know about classes? Have any one of you did the object-oriented programming? Yeah. So we will make kind of class diagram but without operations. So we will start with the entity types and relationship. So what is an entity? Entity is a group of object with the same property. Those who already know object-oriented, entity type is like class. And entities belonging to an entity type are like objects of that class. Right? So what we call in object-oriented programming classes, we are calling them here as entity types. So it is the collection or group of entities with the same property, with the same characteristics. And these entity types can be physical, like it can be a company, it can be student, it can be something which is conceptual, like genders, or like some jobs which actually don't exist physically, but there is some information we can keep about that. So an entity type is like a class and object-oriented. An entity type, we will convert it into relations in relational schema. So these are the UML notations. So we write the first letter in the capital. Uh, And what is entity occurrence, which is a uniquely identifiable object of an entity type? Let's take one example. So this is our entity type, and if we make its occurrences, then we may have multiple employees here. And if we are describing this, because we said that entity type is a collection of similar kind of objects which are described with the help of same properties, so there will be properties or characteristics which will be describing this entity type. So in case of employees, what can be those characteristics? It can be employee ID, it can be name, or it can be many other things. So these are the attributes of those entity type. And when we are talking about a particular employee, for example, employee ID with employee 1, with some name, with some other details, then this is a occurrence. And in this format, we put it like this. So there are many employees which belongs to this entity types, which we are calling with the name employee. And this employee can be described with the help of the properties which we are writing here. So let's see some examples. So there may be many entities. Staff is an entity. Parts, which is the collection of all the different kind of parts. Properties, different kind of properties existing in a town. Different suppliers, collection of all the suppliers which are supplying for something. Customers, products, student, teacher, department, university, all of those are entity types. And then there can be with conceptual existence, like sales, so which date we did the sale, to whom we did the sale, and many more. Work experience, etc., etc., or jobs. So there can be job ID, job title, what's the salary the people are getting who are working at that particular job title. So there can be different kind of entity types. So this is one example, staff and branch. Now these entities cannot exist in like the space individually. So we need to create some, establish some relationship among those entities. And there comes the relationship types. So it is a uniquely identifiable association that include one occurrence from each participating entity type. Let's take an example. So we have an entity type employee. Similarly, we have an entity type department. Right? And there can be many relationships between these two entities. So one of them can be that employees are working for these departments. So this is one of the relationship, and the participating entity types are department and employees here. There can be more than one relationship type between two entities. For example, can you think of something? these are entirely two different relationship among the same entity type. So employees are working for department, and some of these employees might be managers who are managing those departments. So there are two different kind of relationship between relationship type between the same entity type. Let's try to make the occurrence for this one. So if we make for employee, let's assume that there are these four employees here, and let's assume that for this we have two departments. We are not talking about the attributes right now. We will come to the attributes little bit later. And if we talk about the works for, so this is its occurrence diagram. Because there are many employees who are working for the same department, that's why you can see that many lines are coming out of the same department from there. But each employee can work for only one department, that's why only single lines are coming out of here. So this is the relationship occurrence, which actually consists of all the individual relationships between individual entities of employee and department. So this is employee and this is our department. Let's see the examples here. So this is some other examples. We have the different categories of DVDs. So we have divided the DVDs into different genre, and DVDs are of different genres. So there is a relationship between DVD entity type and DVD genre, and these DVDs are rated among some very good and most enjoyable or something like that. So there is a rating, maybe 5-star, 4-star or something. So again, there is a entity type which consists of all the possible ratings, and this consists of all the possible genre the DVD can belong to, and this is basically the collection of all the DVDs, and there are relationship between them. So relationship type name should be with first character in the lower case, whereas the entity type we start with the capital or uppercase. Similarly, here is another example of a relationship type between staff and branch. So branch has staff. Can you see the arrow moving to that direction? So basically we are saying that branches have staff, but you can write it in other different way also. These staff works for this branches, and in that case the arrow direction will change. So it depends on what is important for you right now. So for example, I have written employees works for departments. I can write this instead of this, I can write it like these departments has employees. Right? So it's up to you what you are doing. So depending on that, how you are reading it, you need to put the arrow. Okay? But you need to put only one of them, not both. So similarly, just like we have the entity type occurrences, we have the relationship type occurrence. You don't need to go too much detail into these occurrences because we are interested in this. We are not interested in this. This is just I'm just explaining right now so that you can visualize. Because in conceptual data model, we don't have actual data there. We just have all the employees, we assume that they exist here. So there may be 10, 20, 100, 1000, many number of employees. In conceptual data modeling, we just specify like this. There is no actual data there. So it is just for you to visualize how it will be finally. Okay, but you don't have to pay too much attention to this. If some of the things look very confusing, you can overlook for now. As we will go further in this topic, it will be easier for you to understand it. So this is one of that. Let's see here. This is the staff and branch occurrence or semantic neck or occurrence diagram. See here. Every branch has many staff working under it. That's why you can see multiple lines coming out of the same branch. And in between is the has relationship occurrences. Now, so far, these relationship types can be of different degrees. So far, we have only seen the binary relationship type. Why we are calling it binary? It depends on how many entity types are participating. So both of these are binary because in both of them only two entity types are participating. So works for is also a binary relationship as well as manages is also a binary relationship. But there can be relationships where more than two entity types are participating, and that we will see next time. Thank you very much. One more thing before you go. Is there anyone who is part of reference group? Yeah, we are supposed to meet after the lecture at Rune's office.
You can switch it on. Okay?